Hello, and welcome to episode 51 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We're here today with Senator Craig Zucker of District 14. How are you doing today, Craig?
Jordan, I'm doing fine. How are you?
Excellent. So the first question I'd like to ask is, what are you currently doing or what have you ever done to advance the public interest and why?
Well, right now I'm a state senator, District 14. Mm-hmm. So I represent about 126,000 people in a very diverse district, not only in terms of population, but geography.
Yeah.
So District 14 encompasses Damascus all the way down to Burtonsville. So it hugs Frederick County and then goes all the way to Prince George's County. So, as a state senator, it's my goal to advance the public interest. And that was something that was kind of embedded in me from the time that I was growing up with my parents, who, especially my mother, who was an activist. And, I always feel like giving back is the most rewarding thing.
How do you identify the public interest? How would one even know morally or politically or in any other sense what actually is important to the general public, especially considering that there's so many different competing interests who all claim to be members of your constituency?
Well, I think for me, the public interest is when you see something wrong and you try to fix it. And perfect example of that was, I guess it was now 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
I was upstairs with my wife and we were watching the Today Show.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a segment on children who were victims of identity theft.
Hmm.
And in this segment, it spoke about a two-year-old who had been a victim of identity theft.
Huh.
And my wife looks at me and points to the room next door. And that's where our two-year-old was sleeping. And she said, what is my delegate going to do about this? So sometimes the public interest is what you hear from your family. And other public interest is what you think might be in the best interest of the public. So what we did was we created the first of its kind legislation that protected children indefinitely against identity theft.
And just for our listeners, Senator Craig Zucker was previously Delegate Craig Zucker.
Correct. And I was appointed actually last February. So this February would be my full year in office when Senator Karen Montgomery resigned and I was appointed last February.
So, and then you also, in addition to being a senator, are also employed working with the comptroller's office. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
So what are you doing there to advance the public interest?
Well, it's a fine balancing act. So first, let me tell your listeners, and I think as your own community activism, that I state many places and many times in any situation I could say is you don't have to be an elected official to be a public servant.
Hmm.
So with the comptroller's office, I feel like I'm still a public servant, but it's not advancing legislation. It's advancing, things that will help the community. So for instance, I guess several months ago, there was an explosion in downtown Silver Spring,
mm-hmm.
with the apartment complex.
Right.
That affected a lot of families,
mm-hmm.
In that area. And the comptroller came up with an idea that he wanted to do basically a financial recovery workshop.
Huh.
So he called me.
Huh.
And he said, Craig, can you, obviously not with your senator hat on, but mm-hmm. can you put on your community hat on behalf of my office and organize a community recovery day? So I worked with my comptroller hat on. I worked with the county. I worked with other nonprofits, and we hosted a financial recovery workshop for all the families involved.
What did that look like?
It was fantastic. It was down at Long Branch Community Center,
mm-hmm.
and we had partners from the IRS, the comptroller's office, Housing Community Development, Maryland Housing Partnership, where we were not only helping them get their finances in order, but giving them opportunities in terms of where they can seek employment and permanent and temporary housing.
So it seems like there's lots of ways to help your community. And being an elected official, well, first of all, doesn't mean that you don't need another job. You have to have another job currently in addition to your elected job. But it's not just about introducing legislation and getting laws passed, but it's also kind of acting as an ombudsman and bringing together different resources in both the public and private and nonprofit sectors and trying to build solutions to make things work for community members. Is that right?
Well, a couple things. One is I've always said that elected office is a means, but it's not a means to the end. So you can do a lot of different jobs and still be able to give back to the community. In terms of, I think the Maryland legislature's not necessarily unique in Maryland, but it's unique in this way in terms of it's a part-time job.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody has to, unless you're retired or independent wealthy, you have to have another job. For me, because of the itch I have in terms of serving, it's great that I can still work for another government agency. But you see legislators from all walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are educators, some of them are lawyers. But I believe that regardless of what you're currently doing as a full-time profession, you can still give back in other ways, and especially now more than ever.
So how did it feel to be a part of that day of for a Long Branch where you were able to provide those financial resource courses and resource to the community members? How did you feel when you pulled that event off?
Well, I felt I was really going to gauge on how the participants felt.
How did they feel?
They felt great. I mean, we provided enough food that they could take some home, and we also had resources there that they knew that they weren't being forgotten, and that just because, I mean, what sometimes happens, not all the time, but mm-hmm. what happens often when there's a crisis is we remember them the day of and maybe the next day, but then as time goes on, they're mm-hmm. forgotten. So this was a few weeks after, 3 weeks after, and it was just another way of them realizing that they have a foundation of support that's really coming from the community. I mean, the government can only do so much, but this was something where they saw great community activism as well. So for me, it felt very fulfilling that that this was something that we were able to do for them and that they felt like they were getting something out of it.
Were most of the individuals who were affected by the explosion present?
Yes.
Okay. And then was this in District 14?
No. So this was in District 20.
So this is in another legislative district. And so, and what did these people do to become entitled to this sort of service?
Well, I don't think anybody does anything to be entitled. I think this is something that people should be getting anyway.
They're just members of the community.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that someone should have to have a tragedy in order to realize what public benefits they would have or what services the government would provide.
Yeah.
We just knew that this population, given the tragedy that happened to their livelihood 3 weeks before, were in need of assistance. And in terms of legislative district, I mean, all that stuff is blurred. It doesn't matter what legislative district it's in as long as we're providing a service to the public. And that's why I was very pleased with the leadership from the District 20 team. And
were they surprised, the recipients of this thing? Were they surprised to see the outpouring of support?
I mean, you'd have to ask them. The bottom line is that I hope not, because this is something that not that they should expect, but this is something that we should be providing the public.
So I want to shift a little bit, stay on the same topic, but shift a little bit to constituent services. There's a lot more to being an elected official than just enacting laws, right? So could you tell me a little bit about what constituent services means to you in your capacity as a senator of District 14?
Well, for me, it means everything. Part of the reason why I wanted to be an elected official in my own right was, or one of the reasons why I always tended to work for elected officials in the past, is when someone called their office, I wanted to solve their issue, but I never could do it in my own name. So I would do it as, you know, congressman such and such state.
Yeah, yeah.
Delegate such and such.
So you were a staffer for a congressman?
I was a district, Montgomery County district director for a member of Congress. And then in another life, it felt like I worked at that time as an aide to Delegate Peter Francho. So all of these positions, I always try to cut through the red tape, but I'd always use someone else's name to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I always wanted to be able to do it in my own way. Because I believe that it's not only important to cut red tape for my constituents, it's important to obliterate the red tape. And I mean, I'll never forget when I received a call. I checked my voicemail at the office, and I got a call from someone who lived in Silver Spring in my district, who was her husband was on dialysis. She had three kids, and her heat was off.
Mm-hmm.
She needed emergency housing very quickly. And I remember it was a Friday night. My wife and I were looking through the phone book and calling shelters, trying to get her in. And eventually I just picked up the phone, called County Executive Legge and said, and I didn't know this constituent I didn't know her at all. But mm-hmm. the bottom line was I was her representative.
Yeah.
And this was as important as one of my family members
right.
that needed help. So we called up County Executive Legge. And that evening she was moved into temporary housing. And we got her heat on a couple days later, and everything was fine. But that's what I strive for. That's what I live for. And that's what for me, fulfillment is as an elected official.
Just as background information for our listeners, Senator Zucker just mentioned the name Peter Franchot. That individual used to be a delegate from District 20 in Tacoma Park and later won statewide office as comptroller for the state of Maryland. So Senator Zucker was previously a staffer for Delegate Franchot and currently, in a sense, has remained a staffer for now comptroller Franchot, even though Senator Zucker also is an elected official. So just to give that background.
Thank you, Jordan.
So that constituent services really is a big part of the job. And it sounds like getting the job done and making sure that problems are resolved is a big thing for you. So you're able to call County Executive Ike Leggett, even though he's in a different level of government, right? Because you are in the state legislature, yet you also were able to leverage relationships with elected officials in other levels of government. Is that common?
Well, it should be. I mean, that's how government should work. And when I first ran for the legislature back in 2010, mm-hmm. when I ran for the legislature, one of the things I said was based on my relationships with county, state, and federal government, that will only serve as an advantage to the constituents I represent. And I believe that has been true, and that's based on my continued relationships and good teamwork effort with a lot of these colleagues. So yeah, I mean, that's exactly what happened. But moreover, one of the things that I often say is for housing in Montgomery County, that's a county issue.
Mm-hmm.
But I say just because you call your state senator or your mm-hmm. state delegate, that doesn't necessarily mean that they pass the buck, but they help make sure that the problem's resolved. Even though it might not be them directly resolving it,
yeah.
they can at least cut through the red tape, get the constituent in the right direction, and help toward resolving it.
So why is there red tape? You are a member of the Democratic Party, and a lot of this red tape is a metaphor for government regulations, and regulations, being part of the Democratic Party, are often there to protect the interests of the public. Yet you want to obliterate the red tape. Why was the red tape established to begin with? And how do you reconcile your desire to cut through or obliterate the red tape in the name of constituent service, yet also reconcile that with the idea that legislators previously created that red tape for a purpose?
Well, some of the red tape that I speak of is just people not knowing where to go. So when someone was calling me about emergency housing, they may not even know where to start. And when I'm talking about someone calling at 9 p.m. at night, they're not necessarily going to be able to pick up their family and go to a human resources district office.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, we are part of the red tape, and we want to make sure that we're making government and services accessible. So
you're helping them navigate
correct
current available services. Now, if they already knew where to go, they could pick up the phone and help themselves. But since there's so many different resources that are both nonprofit NGOs and government entities for the state and the county and federal, and that may be so confusing and complicated that they rely on you for guidance.
I hope so. That's always my goal, is for them to rely on us.
And that's a service you provide.
Well, that's a service we all should provide.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is, one is making sure that that they know that they're a priority. Second, another piece of it is information for them, because they may be calling they're not sure where they are in the pipeline. And by us getting involved, we could at least give them a sense of where they're on the pipeline. Sometimes things fall through the cracks and their name was off a list that they needed to be on, and we can help with that. Others are on the list. They just didn't know if they were. So a lot of it is just making sure that we're navigating the bureaucracy for them and being another advocate on their behalf. Because that, I mean, really, they're our bosses. And one of the things that I tell my one of the things that I say out there, say out in the community about myself and my colleagues is, look, even though I represent 127,000 people in District 14, mm-hmm. I'm a state senator, mm-hmm. not a district senator, a state senator.
Mm-hmm.
It was the same thing as a state delegate. So when people call me, I don't, you know, if they're in my district or outside of my district, I want to try to be responsive. Often I'll connect them with their own members of the House or the Senate. But
so you're the chair of the Health and Human Resources Subcommittee of the Appropriation, or sorry, So tell me about what committees you're on right now.
So right now, I was when I was in the House of Delegates, I was chair of the Health and Human Resources subcommittee, which was very, very rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I was very proud of, Jordan, is when I transitioned to the Senate,
mm-hmm.
I saw a lot of the things that I was going to miss in the House. And I was assigned, I guess, to basically fill Karen Montgomery's spot on the committee,
mm-hmm.
which I was assigned to the Education, Health, and Environmental Affairs Committee. Now, just so your listeners are reminded, different than Capitol Hill, every delegate and senator are on one standing committee.
And only one.
And only one, yeah.
And so you said, I heard health and education. So let's say somebody from Baltimore City has an issue and there's a bill which is sitting with your committee, and they're very interested, and they think that you're in a position to, you know, you're the deciding vote here, and they call you, and it may not be, maybe it's not a constituent, maybe it's an advocacy group, and they're calling you up. What do you do when you find out that they don't live in your district?
Well, a couple things. One is to the point of the committee that I serve on, what I was going to say was, one of the things I was very grateful of, and I thought it was a nice olive branch from the Senate, is 3 days after I came to the Senate, I was appointed as the co-chair of a subcommittee.
Huh.
And I was appointed as subcommittee chair of health.
Huh.
Which I thought was very nice and gracious of them. So
because it provided a point of continuity.
For me.
Okay.
For me on the issues. And I think I'm added value, and I guess they believe that I was added value. So it's myself and Shirley Nathan Pulliam. But when anyone comes in to advocate on behalf of a bill, mm-hmm. or an idea, I always want to form some type of relationship with the person who's there. So I'll say, where are you from? And
then
if they say, oh, I'm from Baltimore City, I'll often say, what part? And have you spoken to your delegates and senator about this? And then I often help them strategize in terms of, okay, well, you're represented by this delegate.
Yeah.
This delegate would actually be the best person out of your team to talk to, since they have a direct, they'll have a direct influence on this piece of legislation.
And when you say team, most Marylanders have three delegates representing them, correct?
Correct. So they, most Marylanders have one senator and three delegates.
So, okay. So you're involved in the Senate and you're working on it. So you are in a unique position where you've been in both the House and the Senate. So can you reflect a little bit on the differences? Obviously one is larger, one is smaller. There's a very distinguished individual leading the current body that you're in. You know, how do you reflect on the differences in your new role?
Sure. Well, a couple things. One is there's two distinguished individuals leading both bodies.
Right.
And Speaker Bush, who's the Speaker of the House of Delegates, is probably one of the finest men I've ever met. Just a really a class act. And, you know, I think we're better off in the state for having someone like him there. And the Senate president has been, he and I have had a good relationship for the last 20 years. His name is President Mike Miller.
And he's what is remarkable about him in the national scene?
Well, for President Miller, he's the longest serving Senate president in the United States.
So that's somewhat remarkable.
That's remarkable. And I think that just speaks volumes to him in terms of how he's continued to have relationships going. And I think
but you had a relationship with him even when you were in the House?
Correct.
How is that? Is that normal?
I don't know. I mean, but I could just tell you that he and I have always gotten along very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me personally, that made my decision to want to seek the Senate seat a little more comforting, just knowing that this was someone that I've come to build a strong relationship with over many years. But to answer your question, Jordan, because mm-hmm. It's an interesting one. In terms of how did I feel my transition was, I believe, going from the House to the Senate and how I view the different bodies.
Yeah.
So this is my take on it. And I don't know if you'll get this from many other people on your show who have done the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference, I believe, is in the House of Delegates, there's less congeniality on the House floor and more so in the hallway. And in the Senate, there's much more collaboration and teamwork on the Senate floor than there is in the hallway. And the reason why is in the House of Delegates, when you have a party, a Republican Party, who You've got 141 members of the House of Delegates, and often, I guess at this point, the minority party, who's the Republicans, they feel like they need to be very vocal and aggressive on the House floor in order to have their voices heard, because there's so many. In the Senate, they do have a seat at the table. You often have Republicans who are floor leaders on bills, meaning they're the ones who are taking an active leadership role, even if it's a Democratic bill on the Senate floor. And when I say they're less collegial in the hallway, because there's so many fewer of us, we don't see each other as much. In the House, we would, our offices could be right next door to each other, so we'd be interacting all the time, because it's it, even though it's a bigger body, it's much smaller in terms of the universe where we all are interacting.
So how have you adapted to that change?
For me, it was, I mean, it was definitely weird going from the House to the Senate. The best analogy I used was that I grew up playing baseball. I was darn good at playing baseball. And for me, it was like switching teams, like not necessarily playing for my rival team, but switching baseball teams mid-season, and then being a very good catcher, and then being told, hey, you're probably going to start, but you may not start, but you're going to be playing left field or right field instead of catcher, what you're normally used to. Because I was on the budget committee in the House, and now I'm on a policy committee. So there were just a lot of changes. But I think at least people know what a senator is sometimes.
Yeah.
I think when I would say I'm a delegate, they would say you're delegate. But no, it's both jobs. I mean, I will always look back fondly on my time in the House, and it was so gratifying.
Interesting. So what are you trying to accomplish in the Senate? What is it that you really like to do? Or looking back upon your time in the House, what were you able to accomplish? And how do you reconcile that with what promises you made on the campaign trail? They often, it's said that you campaign in poetry and you govern in prose. Is that something that you feel resonates with you?
So what I did was when I ran in, so I ran once before in 2002 for the House of Delegates. I was 27 years old, and lost by 300 votes, but always stayed active. So I just wanted your listeners to know, because when I say when I first ran for office in 2010, that's not necessarily factually correct, but how about I say when I first ran for office and was successful, which was 2010, I had my second mailer was a mailer that said an agenda to move you forward. Move us forward. And in this campaign platform, it spoke about things I wanted to accomplish in terms of public safety, education, spending, transportation infrastructure. So all of these promises that I made. Mm-hmm. And not my first session, but my second session, so that would have been 2012, I went through, and I've continued to do it, and systematically gone through those campaign promises and checked them off.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
And do you feel like your constituents are aware of that?
It's yes and no. I mean, it takes resources to let my constituents know what I've done, but I did send out a mailer this last time in 2014 and said, promises made, promises kept.
That must have been felt pretty good.
Of course. That's why I'm in office. So when I make a commitment, I try to make it happen.
So as we near the end of the podcast, I'd like to ask you just to reflect on your years in not only elected office, but in public service. And your motivations and the sacrifices you've made and why you have decided to persist in serving others, even when, as you just acknowledged, you don't always get recognition for the work you've done. The people you're serving sometimes aren't even aware that you've even kept good on your promises, right? So why is it that you keep pushing forward and doing the best you can for your community?
I'm in this job not to get credit. I'm in this job to get things done. And the way I've been interacting with my colleagues and all the legislation and money that I've protected in the budget, I say you can get a lot done as long as you mind getting zero credit for it. And I feel like the better you are, the more credit you get. And I've been very fortunate for my colleagues to give me credit when I've deserved it. And I'm the first one to give credit to other people. If I can make, and when I've made a difference in just one person's life, that's enough for me to keep going. And I believe that we live in a great community. I always look at the best in people. And I think we have a limitless future if we continue to trust each other, believe that things can get better, and always know that you should be there for your neighbor, even if you don't know who they are.
So that is Senator Craig Zucker of District 14 in Montgomery County, Maryland, who has an inclusive and holistic view of what a community is. And basically, it's very simple for Senator Zucker. Take care of your constituents, or if you're not elected, just take care of your community, taking care of other individuals, doing what you can to help out in whatever capacity you have to help out with whatever resources are at your disposal. And that's just the right thing to do. And he just so happens to be able to help out in unique ways due to his capacity as an elected official. But it sounds as though even when he ran and lost, he continued to help out and try to make a difference in individual lives without that title. So for listeners out there, you don't need to be an elected official to do public service and do the exact same thing that these elected officials are doing. And in fact, if you do it, sometimes people take notice, and one day you too can be in elected office. So thank you so much for joining us for episode 51 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We'll talk to you next time.